Hello, and welcome to the introduction to Hyper-V Jumpstart. I'm Simon Perriman, technical evangelist, and I'm joined by Jeff Woolsey today to bring you an exciting day of training. We have a 9-hour event covering a lot of different modules to give you everything you need to know about Hyper-V from the bottom up, talking about our cloud story, Hyper-V storage, networking, high availability, and then even how that integrates with our private cloud model, looking at the System Center 2012 components. First, let me introduce myself. I'm Simon Perriman, a technical evangelist with Microsoft, and I used to be an engineer on the clustering and high availability team. I am certified in Microsoft Private Cloud Technologies as well as VMware Technologies. So, really happy to be able to speak to all of you today about all of our different products covering a broad series of virtualization components. Now, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Simon. I'm Jeff Woolsey. I'm a Principal Program Manager in the Windows Server and Cloud Division. I've had the pleasure of working on virtualization now for over 15 years, 10 of it here at Microsoft. Before then, I was at a small startup, way back when people wanted to run DOS and Windows 3.1 on their Power Mac 6100, 7100, and 8100. So back then, it was not only virtualization, but it was actually binary translation where we did conversion from PowerPC to x86 and back. So it's been working on virtualization for a long time. Now I've been at Microsoft, been working on virtualization as a key part of our cloud strategy, whether it's been virtualization as part of virtual server, or now we're approaching our third major release of Hyper-V in Windows Server 2012. So it's been fantastic.
Thanks, Jeff. And so what we're expected to deliver today is really covering the basics of virtualization. So this course is designed for our IT professionals who are maybe new to virtualization, maybe just have a little bit of background, or they've been using virtualization with some other hypervisor vendors or third parties. Now, we do expect that you have some basic knowledge and basic understanding of storage, networking, Windows Server, and some of those kind of core infrastructure components that are required to really understand how virtualization fits in and the benefits that it can provide to your company and to your career. Now, also want to mention this is a great time to invest in Microsoft training. We do have a lot of resources available. So while this is a free event, if you want a week-long training, other more advanced and more detailed training, we do have a lot of resources provided by Microsoft Learning and also the Microsoft Virtual Academy. Now, let's talk about this particular jumpstart, what we're really focusing on. Now, again, our goal here is to really give you an overview of the Microsoft Virtualization Platform, specifically focusing on Hyper-V. So our first module is going to provide an introduction to virtualization, really trying to understand what are the basic components and Microsoft's vision of virtualization. We're then going to move on and cover some of the basic infrastructure requirements. What type of physical servers do you need? What do you need to be able to run a hypervisor, to be able to run virtual machines on top of your server? We're then going to go ahead and look at some of the networking features of Hyper-V and the best practices around configuring this communication between your different servers. Next is going to be Hyper-V storage, and we're going to be looking at a lot of the different enhancements that have just been released in Windows Server 2012. After a lunch break, we're going to come back and then focus on Hyper-V management. So this is really how can we optimize communicating with our virtual machine from our host, different management options. Next, we're going to move on to my favorite topic, clustering and high availability, looking at how we can keep these virtual machines online and running in a resilient fashion. Finally, we're going to go and talk about some of our System Center suite, our Data Center Management suite. And a lot of people ask, when do I use just Hyper-V? When do I use System Center? And really, we're going to explain this, but it's basically when you start to scale up. Hyper-V Manager, it's great if you're running a few servers, but once you start to run a data center, lots of distributed servers, multiple data centers, this is when we're really adding value with our Virtual Machine Manager component. So you can manage dozens, hundreds of servers from a single interface. And our final module is going to look at the other System Center components beyond Virtual Machine Manager and how those relate to Hyper-V. So how we can automate Hyper-V, how we can monitor Hyper-V, and then how we can deploy virtual machines both in a public cloud and in a private cloud. Now with that, we're going to go ahead and actually talk about some of our core virtualization features with our introduction to Hyper-V. I'm going to turn it over to Jeff.
Thank you very much, Simon. So before we get started and talk a little bit about virtualization in Hyper-V, one thing I wanted to do was very briefly talk about the clouds that we offer, because you know we do offer both private clouds with Windows Server and System Center, but we also offer public clouds. And one thing is I just kind of want to make sure people kind of understand where we're going to in today, and also don't miss out on what the advantages that the public cloud has to offer. So for example, today, if you look at what we deliver, we have, in the terms of our public cloud, we have Windows Azure. Windows Azure provides lots of capabilities, lots of different types of service offerings, whether it's Office 365, whether it's Dynamics, whether it's management within Tune. What we get in the public cloud is all sorts of platform as a service capabilities, software as a service, as well as infrastructure as a service, all located in the public cloud. And what's great about Windows Azure is, number one, is the incredible scale that we get with running Azure. The fact that you can create and run services, deploy services maybe in one region and then deploy those worldwide, you can get tremendous value. And I'll get to more of that in just a second. Then we're going to be really focusing, most of today is really going to be on private cloud. I don't be very clear about what we mean by private cloud, because very often I'm talking with customers and they'll say, hey, you know what, I've deployed Hyper-V, I've deployed Windows Server, do I have cloud now? Or I've deployed virtualization, and people, you know, historically what I've seen over the last 10 years at Microsoft is people have been very, very focused on the hypervisor, very, very focused on virtualization. And let me tell you something, as someone who's lived in that part of the space and understands the value and importance of the technology that makes the core virtualization stack, I get that. Okay, there's something really cool about saying, look, I got my laptop and I'm running, you know, a whole bunch of VMs on it, or I'm running a server farm and I've got this many servers with this many hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of VMs. I get that. But what we've seen historically is people tend to focus on that too, and what they tend to actually miss is the fact that, you know, they're not doing the proper systems management. So when we talk about private cloud, it actually means Windows Server and System Center. And this is really important, because no matter what virtualization platform people are deploying, what I've historically seen is they tell me, yeah, we've deployed, you know, they can tell me I've got this many nodes and I'm running this many VMs, but when I ask them about the health and performance of their applications and their workloads, even the most basic questions, they can't answer them. Very often I'll talk with a CXO that will come into Microsoft and I'll ask him very basic questions. How many hosts do you have? How many VMs do you have? And he'll confidently answer, well, we've got 50 hosts and we've got this many VMs. We've got 250 hosts with this many VMs. And the guy sitting next to him will actually say, well, actually, no, it's more like 350 hosts and this many VMs. And the guy sitting at the end of the table who's actually running the service will tell you, well, you're both wrong. It's actually about 600 hosts and this many VMs. Well, if you can't even give me that level of information, it tells me very quickly you don't have the right systems management in place. The other thing to point out is people tend to underinvest and forget about the fact that you want to be monitoring the applications. So at the end of the day, if I'm running Link, if I'm running Exchange, if I'm running SharePoint, if I'm running SQL, if I'm running Dynamics, at the end of the day, I honestly don't care if SQL's running on a VM or a physical machine. I care that it's running well. And so very often people will say, well, I'm monitoring the VM and everything looks like it's green here. Okay, well, let's set up System Center and let's actually monitor your infrastructure. And very quickly, we'll see all sorts of alerts and warnings go up that tell us, well, in fact, no, things aren't going as well. In fact, I've run into many cases where people said, I had workloads that are about ready to fall over, because while the VM said everything was running great, the workloads inside were starving for resources. So when we talk about private cloud, it's very much server and System Center. So, and of course, what we look as kind of the common technology, the glue that brings all of these things together, is identity, virtualization, management, as well as having the best development tools to deliver solutions in both of these areas. Because one of the questions I get asked all the time is, Jeff, what do you see as the Microsoft cloud vision? Is everything going to run on private? Is everything going to run on public? The answer is yes. It's going to run everywhere. Okay, we actually understand and expect that customers are going to build their private clouds. They're going to build their public clouds. They're going to run in service providers. And they expect to be able to move between all of these and be able to do it on their own business terms. There are plenty of folks that have said, you know what, Jeff, I get what's going on in Azure. In fact, we have governments around the world that are thrilled to say, you know what, why am I running my own mail servers? Why aren't I just running this in Office 365? Why am I deploying Office you know, for every user, why don't I just let Microsoft handle that through Office 365? Why don't I do my management through Intune? Okay, let's do that. But at the same time, there are plenty of folks that have said, you know what, for compliance reasons, for regulatory reasons, I have specific workloads that have to be under tight control. For example, I've spent a lot of time traveling this last year. I've been to Australia, Brazil, South America, Canada, and I've spoken to folks in Canada that have told me quite simply, look, Jeff, I love Azure. I love Office 365. And in fact, we're putting a bunch of things up there. But I have a class of workloads that have to run on Canadian soil, in a Canadian data center, by a Canadian citizen. So no matter how great, you know, things are going there, we're still going to have a private cloud. Don't try and convince me otherwise. And actually, that's not my goal. My goal is to make sure we provide you the best business solution. So in that case, let's build the best private cloud together, and let's make sure that it allows we to be able to give you the flexibility to move to the public or provide a hybrid solution. So with that, I just want to take a couple moments to talk very quickly about Azure and some of the major successes we've had in here. Now, quite simply, Windows Azure, we've got hundreds of case studies publicly available. I just picked out two at random, two that I find actually very fascinating. One is the work we've been doing with NASA. That's right, yeah, those guys. NASA has been doing some fantastic work in terms of all of the Mars probes that have been going on. As you know, NASA's mission is to pioneer the future in space exploration, science discovery, and aeronautics. And just, they're a tremendous partner out there. Well, what's been interesting about the work that NASA's been doing with Mars is they've generated more data from the Mars rover landings than in all of the previous NASA missions combined, because they're able to gather so much data. So one of the challenges NASA had was, well, what are we going to do with all this data? Where are we going to put this? How are we going to catalog all of this? And what they really were trying to figure out was, is there a way we could leverage everyone, the world, to help us do that? And so we partnered with NASA on a project called Be a Martian. And in fact, it's all running, the back end all runs on Azure. And what's great about this is they continuously give us more data. As more data is incorporated, Azure just grows. Okay, one of the biggest challenges is, how do you deal with capacity planning for something that has potentially, you know, ongoing, incredibly growing data growth? Big data is something we're hearing about constantly. Azure's the perfect place for this. NASA didn't need to set up any new data centers. They didn't need to set up any new servers, any new networking, any new storage. Azure just grows on demand. And so with Microsoft, we've created this solution. And in fact, you can download an application called Be a Martian. It runs great on Windows 8, Windows 7. There's an actual Surface application. But what's really cool about this is literally tens of thousands of people around the world, you can join in. There are pictures on Mars, and people are helping catalog these images. Because honestly, if NASA took all of their resources and spent all of their time cataloging all these images, I think I heard something that would take them decades to be able to do all of this. So they're actually taking advantage of people that want to help out, and they've created this great community. So this is one example with NASA. Another one, you may have heard a few stories about a woman who wrote this fantastic set of books about a young wizard named Harry. Harry Potter is something, you know, we love at our house. I've got two daughters. My oldest daughter has been reading Harry Potter. I don't know how many times she's read and reread the books. And the whole Harry Potter experience has been tremendous. And J.K. Rowling, she's just done some tremendous things. And when it comes to Harry Potter, one of the things that Ms. Rowling wanted to do was offer a huge thank you to all of her fans. She was just overwhelmed with the outpouring of support for the Harry Potter books and the movies, that she wanted to do something special. She wanted to create a site that had images, new visuals, new interviews with folks, new drawings, things that you never saw in the movies or in the books or in the DVDs or any of that stuff, as a huge thank you. So what she decided to do is create this site called Pottermore. And it went live April 14th, 2012. It attracted over 1 billion page views in over 2 weeks. Take a moment and think about that. over 1 billion page views in a little over 2 weeks. More than 10 million unique users to date. And honestly, this was, you know, this was actually quite a while ago that I gathered this data. So I'm sure they're in the many tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of users. The average user visits 43 pages, spends 20 minutes, and they're getting about 25,000 new account signups daily. What's interesting about this is when they initially designed Pottermore and they initially went to go build this, they thought, well, we'll just do this on a private cloud. They actually started on private. They didn't start on Azure. Well, here's a big problem. How do you do capacity planning when the world loves your books? I mean, literally, you're talking 1 billion page views in a little over 2 weeks. I don't honestly know how you do capacity planning here. It's one of those, I think we got it right. We bought a whole bunch of servers, we bought a whole bunch of storage, we bought a whole bunch of networking. We think it looks right. Well, what actually happened was they turned it on for their beta. They were overwhelmed in a matter of days. They couldn't take it. And they looked at it and they said, look, we can invest in more storage, we can invest in some more networking, we can invest in some more connectivity, and we may get it right, but we don't know. And we said, you know what? Let's put this on Azure, because Azure will automatically and dynamically grow elastically based on the usage. And so that's exactly what they did. Capacity planning, like I said, was an incredible challenge. And their initial demand just blew away all of their capacity planning expectations. Now Azure provides them the unlimited scale they need. And with something they were able to deliver in North America, click. Now we make it available in Europe, click. Now we make it available in South America, and Azure does all the replication. So just a couple things about how powerful Azure is, and if you haven't had a chance, I would recommend you take a look at the Pottermore site. All right, so with that, let me switch on over to give you a little bit of background about how we've been using Hyper-V now. So I'm going to switch to private cloud, and we're going to be on private cloud for the rest of the day. All right, so a couple things I want to make sure people are aware of. We've been using Hyper-V, we've been deploying Hyper-V, we've been successfully delivering on Hyper-V in private clouds for actually many, many years, and a lot of people don't realize just how successful we've been. For example, if you're watching this Virtual Academy, most likely, Simon, you've gone to technet.microsoft.com, an extremely popular website. This is where our IT pros go. This is where you'll see PowerShell scripts. You'll see documentation. We get over about 1 million hits per day on technet.microsoft.com. In fact, it went so well that the IT staff, our internal operations, said, well, we're going to do that for MSDN as well. So if you're a developer listening to this, well, you go to MSDN where you get code samples, you get more documentation, all sorts of things about for our developer network. Well, that gets about over 3 million hits per day. These have been powered by Hyper-V now for many, many years. In fact, this was all going so well that we expanded it to connect.microsoft.com, social.microsoft.com, CodePlex, and honestly, I lost track years ago of all the sites that were powering with Hyper-V. If it wouldn't surprise me if someone said, by the way, everything's now powered by Hyper-V. It's just, we have so many properties out there. But what's interesting is we actually have the largest one, which is microsoft.com itself. That's been powered by Hyper-V now for over 5 years. And that goes all the way back to the beta of Windows Server 2008 Hyper-V. We've been using Hyper-V to power these largest properties. We get over about 15,000 requests per second and over 40 million hits per day. So, you know, when people ask me, gosh, does Hyper-V deliver the type of scale and performance, you know, can it run my workload? I say, look, we've been doing this for many years. Over 1.2 billion page hits per month with zero downtime. So it's been hugely successful running some of our most valuable properties.
Yeah, I really want to emphasize that point. You know, a lot of people say, will this work for my business? I mean, look at the scale of this, one of the biggest web properties in the world. If we can run that on Hyper-V, we're pretty sure we can handle whatever workloads you have in your own data center on that.
And that's been running off Server 2008 Hyper-V and Server 2008 R2 Hyper-V. And now we're here with Server 2012. One last thing to show you just how we've been doing private cloud in action with some real tangible benefits is actually how we deliver private clouds at our Microsoft Management Summit. So every year we deliver what we call the Microsoft Management Summit, or MMS. MMS is something IT pros, system admins, they look forward to every year. One of the most popular things at MMS is the hands-on labs. People will literally come to MMS, not even go to any sessions, and spend all week at the hands-on labs so they can spend time using our System Center products, which we set up, and they can run all of them. In MMS in 2009 was literally the last year that we ran everything on physical servers. We used about 570 servers and 36 racks. Starting with MMS 2010, we moved everything to private cloud. So in 2010, we went from 570 servers and 36 racks to 41 servers and three racks. A dramatic reduction in physical servers. From a power standpoint, we went from 570 servers at 200 watts at over 114,000 watts to 41 servers at 200 watts to 8,200 watts, almost a 14x power reduction just on the servers. That's an extremely tangible benefit. Who wouldn't like to save 14x in power costs? From the client standpoint, the way the hands-on labs work is people go to a hands-on lab, and we've traditionally had towers with a monitor, a keyboard, and mouse. We've had rich clients. We had about 650 rich clients at 120 watts per client, or 78,000 watts. Well, what we did was we moved to thin clients at 19 watts, which was 12,350, over a 6x power reduction on clients. And just because of the footprint savings alone, the I'm going from 36 racks to 3, or from 650 full-size towers to 650 thin clients, we actually needed one less semi to do all the transportation, because we load everything up, we create all the labs here in Redmond, and then we put them on some semis and deliver them. Of course, from a management standpoint, System Center was how we drove and delivered on private cloud here. Operations manager monitored the health and performance of our Windows and Linux labs. I'll talk a lot more about interoperability in Linux shortly. Configuration manager, such as using desired configuration management, DCM, to ensure a uniform deployment of the cloud. And virtual machine manager to provision and manage the virtualization lab infrastructure. What was also very interesting about MMS 2010 was that was the year we released Service Manager. And in Service Manager, we had 100 labs ready to go. Well, what happened was, for that first time that we went and did the 100 labs, we had 250 people show up. In the past, to reprovision, we wouldn't have done it. We would have basically said, you know what, come back in an hour, we'll slot you in later. Because this was all done with a virtualization infrastructure and private cloud, we were able to add more labs on the fly. And in total, we were able to deliver over 40,000 Hyper-V virtual machines for 80 different labs in 5 days on 41 physical servers. So honestly, it couldn't have gone any better than this. In fact, the biggest challenge I had with MMS 2010, and I know people listen to this one carefully, the biggest challenge I had with this was, how are we going to top this for 2011? Well, this is how we did it. In MMS 2011, we went from 3 racks of servers down to 2 racks of servers. So there's actually all of the hardware we delivered for MMS 2011 a year later. All of the hands-on labs were delivered in that right there. What we did was, we went from 3 racks to 2. We actually reduced the numbers of servers. We went from 41 down to 32. We actually increased the core count, because we went from 4 cores per server to 12 cores with symmetric multi-threading. But get this one. We reduced the amount of memory in the entire pool. In MMS 2010, we used over 5 terabytes of physical memory. In 2011, we used only 4 terabytes of memory, yet we delivered more labs. This was a byproduct of dynamic memory that we'd introduced, and we saved over $80,000 in memory costs alone, just by not using a terabyte of memory. So this has just been a huge example of how private cloud has allowed us to save in terms of time, in terms of delivery, in terms of elasticity, in terms of deployment. Massive savings across the board. Finally, one night at MMS 2011, we were kind of curious to know, just how hard could we push this? Just how many VMs could we run? So we actually fired up all the labs, as many VMs as we could, and we ran over 7,200 VMs across 32 blade servers. That's 225 VMs per host, and you can see there it is in Perfmon. So tremendous, tremendous capabilities in there. So I just wanted to kind of set the stage with where we've been in Server 2008 and 2008 R2. It's been extremely successful. In fact, over the last year, we've grown major share with Hyper-V. And again, that's all been on 2008 R2. Now we're here with 2012. And 2012 is really a generational leap. I'm going to be very clear here. Simon, you and I could chat here all day. We could chat actually here for 2 days, and we still won't scratch the surface of what's new in Server 2012, and then even in System Center 2012 SP1. This is a massive release across the board, whether it's storage, whether it's networking, whether it's virtualization, whether it's management, whether it's PowerShell, whether it's automation, you name it. This is a massive release. We're going to do our best today to drill in into Hyper-V. So if you think about Hyper-V before Windows Server 2012, it's been delivered in two forms. It's a capability of Windows Server. So when you install Windows Server, it's a role that you enable, and you run. And one of the things I wanted to quickly mention is there's a lot of misconceptions about Windows Server and what a deployment of Windows Server means. So let me quickly jump on this for just one second. A lot of people seem to think that when you install Windows Server, it's got all of these things that are running, roles and features like print and web and file. That's not the case. Okay, let me be very clear. Think of it this way. When you install Windows Server, it's a blank slate. You determine what's the role of this, and we'll actually walk through this shortly. But what's the role? Is this a print server? Is this a file server? Is this a domain controller? Is this a virtualization server? So Windows Server gives you that flexibility and gives you that capability to do that. Hyper-V is virtualization as simply built in at the absolute, deeply integrated and core of Windows Server. So it's been available as part of Server 2008, 2008 or 2, and as part of Server 2012. I also want to mention that we also offer it as a completely free hypervisor. You can download Microsoft Hyper-V Server. Now, I know it sounds very closely like Windows Server, and I know the name can be confusing. That's why I wanted to mention this. It's actually called Microsoft Hyper-V Server. It's a free standalone product. Let me say that one more time, because nobody ever believes me on this one, Simon. It's a free product. It is just a hypervisor. So if you're interested in just having a virtualization platform, a feature-rich enterprise-class hypervisor for free, we've got that as well, and I'll talk about that in the future. So that's kind of how we delivered in Server 2008 R2. Simon, why don't you take us through virtualization in private cloud a little bit more?
All right, that sounds great. Thanks, Jeff. So first question that I get asked a lot is, does virtualization equal private cloud? Are they the same thing? And the answer to that is no, they're actually not. They have a lot of similarities, and virtualization is a key part of the private cloud, but there's really a lot more to get this full model of the private cloud. Now, you guys probably know a lot of the benefits of virtualization already. Jeff already talked about the server consolidation, where we started with 570 servers, reduced that down to 2 racks. And I mean, the benefits, as you saw, not just on the cost of shipping, not just on the cost of power, but just data center space, maintenance, having all those physical wires, that physical space that you have to heat and cool. So the server consolidation is one of the major benefits of virtualization. Next, we have the easier deployment. So you create a virtual machine, you make a copy of that, a clone, and then you can easily redeploy that again and again. And it can be pre-configured with things such as your users, passwords, accounts. So if you compare that to the traditional model, I mean, back in the day, right, 10 years ago, how would people order servers when they needed to go deploy a new server? It was a long process. They would get a call, they would make an order form, order it, get it shipped there, wire it, secure it. I mean, it would take often several weeks to several months to deploy a new server. Now we can do it literally in minutes. We then have the benefits of elasticity. As you start to monitor those virtual machines, you can easily scale up as you need to provide more resources or scale back down, as you can free up that capacity. I know one of my favorite examples of those are if you're going to launch a new website, maybe you have an event-based website such as the premiere of a movie. It's going to be really popular right when the movie starts to launch. Afterwards, people are going to stop visiting. And so having that flexibility to easily scale up, easily scale down means that you can reallocate those resources to other places. And virtualization also has this ability to run multiple workloads that are still isolated, but on a single physical server. So, you know, we'd often have times where there'd be applications where there's 2 different versions. There's the version 1, version 2. Both are still needed in the environment, yet they cannot run on that same server. Things such as Office 2003, Office 2007. So what we can do is isolate them, yet still run them on that same physical host, providing you with easier management and the benefits of accessing both programs without having to provide new hardware for it. And then, of course, high availability and mobility. We could detect the health of the virtual machine, its underlying hardware, and even the services inside the virtual machine. And if they crash, we can restart it and be resilient to unplanned failures. If we need to do maintenance, we can move these virtual machines around between different hosts for planned maintenance. But what we really want to do here is take you guys to the next step, to the private cloud. And here we're going to add the benefits of automation, pools of resources, self-service, and monitoring and chargeback. And we're going to cover these in a little more detail later. But what we really want to talk about is why we want you to start thinking about the cloud. Now, there's a lot of benefits both to you as an IT professional and to your organization. Now, the main ones that we like to highlight are agility, focus, and economics. And by agility, that really means having flexibility to go and deploy your services or applications anywhere in your environment, even to someone else's environment in a public cloud. Now, it also means that your business is more agile. Let's say your competitor comes out with a brand new product. You say, wow, I need to go and build this as well to, you know, stay in the game, stay competitive. Well, if you're in the traditional world, you would have your developers write the application, you'd pick up the phone, order the server, and then you have that cycle of several weeks for the server to come in, to be racked, to be delivered. Now, IT, you guys can be the yes guy. You say, yeah, I'll go throw it up as soon as your developer's ready. So really, the delays are no longer on the infrastructure, no longer on the IT pros. When the business needs to move, we can say, yes, we are ready. And this now gives us the ability to let IT focus on IT and let the business decision makers focus on the business. They should no longer have to think about, well, will IT let me do this? Do we have the hardware that can do this? How long will it take for us to release this product? IT can just say yes. Give us the code, we'll get it up and running in a matter of hours or a matter of days. So business guys, you guys worry about the business. You tell us what we need to do. Let the IT guys worry about the IT, and we'll make sure that we can support your business. And so this really makes the IT department more valuable to the company as well. They're yes men. They're no longer the end, the bottleneck, the delay. When you have a product, we can go get it up and running for you. And this helps with economics as well. Now imagine if you have a service, right, that you want to release, but you're delayed by the time it takes to deploy it. Well, as we're eliminating those delays, we get quicker time to market. That means that you're offering services more quicker, which means your company is making money quicker. Now, additional economic benefits, of course. There's different models when you use the cloud. You only pay for resources that you use, so you often don't have to spend a lot of money upfront investing in lots of servers for an application that may not be used that much. Use existing servers, use applications on demand, and have better economic planning. But another component of economics as well comes to high availability and service monitoring. If we can better monitor our services and our applications, keep them online better, keep them running for longer, have continual availability for these applications, that means there's no downtime. Remember, your businesses, they only make money when your services are online. When a service crashes and it may take a week to reorder a part for that physical server, you're losing money. When we move to this cloud and virtualized world, as long as we can clone the virtual machine, move it to a different host, monitor the health of these services and applications, we keep them online, we keep them running, we keep them more resilient, and we keep the business making money. And again, this makes you guys, the IT professionals, more valuable to the company. You guys are keeping the company in the money. So think of investing in the cloud, not just to help the technology, but also there's a lot of benefits to your career as well. It's making sure that the business can run better, and that makes you look good. But when we do talk about the cloud as well, I often hear three major obstacles that customers tell me. Is it secure? What about compliance? And is it compatible with all of my existing investments that I have? Well, the way you have to look at a cloud is it's a pool of centralized resources. If you look at a public cloud like Windows Azure, Microsoft has the world's best security experts collaborating on this system. We get great economies of scale by being able to pool our minds, pool all of our resources, and then also have better detection because we have more systems that we're monitoring. If a virus attacks a few servers, we have the best monitoring in the world to detect that, so we can quickly isolate those servers, keep our other applications and resources running. So when you think about security, don't think about, do I trust my data with someone else? You've got to ask yourself, do I trust my data with the world's best security experts working on it? And I certainly hope so. Now, compliance is a similar issue. If you're worried about medical records, legal records, credit card data. You have to follow compliance laws such as PCIs. It's the same concept. Let experts who are professionals in just compliance handle this data. We're going to ensure that it's secure and offering the best compliance possible. But problem or question number one I get is, I have a private cloud. I've invested in these hypervisors. I've invested in these hardwares. Will this work with Microsoft's vision of Hyper-V and Windows Azure with the public cloud? And absolutely it will. With all of our products, we design them to be interoperable throughout the stack. Whether you're looking at your hardware, your servers, your application frameworks, we can continually monitor them and integrate them into our environment. So it's not a case of you having to throw out your existing hardware and buy everything brand new. Not at all. Keep your existing hardware. Make new investments in the Microsoft platform and use System Center to heterogeneously manage everything. We manage different hypervisors, application frameworks, storage, service management throughout the stack. You can have some confidence that you do not have to throw away what you already have. You can continue investing and integrating with our product. Now, Jeff showed this slide a little earlier, and I just kind of want to define, what is the private cloud, what is the public cloud, and what's kind of the difference between them? Well, essentially, they really are the same thing. They're offering IT as a service. You need to make a request, you get a resource. Now, the main difference between the private cloud and the public cloud is who the customers are. With a public cloud, this is a company, such as Microsoft's Windows Azure, that lets other companies buy their IT resources and buy their IT services. The private cloud, on the other hand, is what you guys are running, your own data center, your own resources, but your customers are the different business units. So you have engineering, research and development, human resources, legal. These are your different customers that are still using you as a service and offering this IT as a service. Now, again, we do have this common framework, and we really think that this is important so that if you've already started investing in Microsoft, you don't have to go learn new skills, new technologies to continue using our cloud solutions, the public and private cloud. With identity, we continue to use Active Directory that allows you to have identity on-premise and up in the cloud and have federation between the two with single sign-on. With virtualization, we have Hyper-V. You have your virtual machines on-premise, and you can go move those virtual machines up into the cloud and manage them using a single interface, System Center 2012 App Controller. And this extends to our broad management across these cloud platforms. With System Center, we manage our public clouds, we manage our private clouds, and with SP1, we can even manage third-party clouds. And we're going to show a demo of us deploying a virtual machine in a third-party hoster a little later today as well. And then we have our development framework. So we're going to talk a bit about our DevOps later, which is this interaction between our developers and our IT department and how we can drive efficiency between these two groups. But with developers, a lot of them say, hey, I'm worried about this cloud. I'm going to have to relearn everything I do. But that's not true. If you're building applications for your private cloud, for your public cloud, you can continue to use Visual Studio. Use the .NET framework, and these applications can run both on-premise and up in the public cloud. Now, as we look at the cloud, we really try to focus on these four attributes, the things that differentiate our private cloud, our public cloud, and our on-premise from just this core virtualization. So first of all is pooled resources. Jeff, actually, why don't you jump in and define exactly what resource pooling is here?
Well, we want to make sure people want to be able to define storage pools or networking pools or CPU or memory, and then they want to be able to basically pool all of these things together and then divvy these up in a most efficient way, cost-effective way. And then as you have here, self-service. So for example, if a department, if my central IT wants to be able to deploy IT as a service, infrastructure as a service, and I want department heads or people within my organization to be able to provision their own virtual machines or provision their own services, I need a typical three-tier application, or I'm setting up a project for the next 18 months internally and I need SharePoint set up. Wouldn't it be great if I could go to a catalog of ready-made SharePoint resources that are ready to go? I also want it to be elastic. I want it to be able to grow over time and is needed. So for example, maybe the project started out with just a few people, and actually it's gotten so successful over the years that I want it to be able to grow elastically and be able to do that. Whether that's on-premise with a private premises with a private cloud, or in the cloud with Azure, we want to be able to do that. And of course, usage-based, to be able to charge that base back on use. Because that is one of the big efficiencies, is to be able to charge back based on those pooled resources.
Absolutely. And I think with usage-based as well, beyond just being able to charge back, it helps you predict what you're going to be using in the future. Now, we had this one customer. They're a games developer for a large online social network. You could probably guess which one. And as they were going through their development process, every time they released a new game, you would release it on-premise, and sometimes the games would be really popular, sometimes they wouldn't. And this just wasn't an efficient business model for them. They said, well, we'd buy these servers, but then they wouldn't be used, and then we would keep them unused for 6 months until we released a new project and hope that would be successful. So they started using Windows Azure as essentially their test platform for the success of the game. They'd release their new app, and they would use it and push it out on Windows Azure. So this way they could monitor its growth, look at how popular it is. As it needed to scale up from 10,000 users to 100,000 users, those resources could be automatically given to them, scale up to 1 million, tens of million. Now what they would do, after a few months, they would monitor this use, see the growth patterns, predict what type of resources they would need. From that, they were then able to pull everything back on-premise and then have more predictable patterns. So they would test it out in the cloud, figure out its growth pattern, then pull it back on-premise, where then they would have this additional capabilities of control and customization. So this is how we try to differentiate our public cloud with all of these advantages from our private cloud. Now, with the public cloud, you're running your virtual machines up there. However, there are some limitations on the actions you can do, because you're running in a virtualized environment, and you don't have that much control of the physical infrastructure. Now, if you need this additional capability to monitor your physical infrastructure, do customization, this is where you want to think about this private cloud. Now, you know, Jeff mentioned an example earlier up in Canada. They have restrictions on their cloud services. They need to be always run a certain way with certain legal compliance regulations. And so if you need that additional control, that additional customization, that's when you're going to bring it on-premise and run everything yourself. So with the Microsoft Private Cloud, we really focus on the four key areas that we think are our competitive advantages here. First of all is our ability to monitor applications. Now, with Microsoft, we have the advantage that we're throughout the stack. We work so closely with our hardware vendors, storage, networking, compute. We then have our operating systems, our virtual machines, and our applications. But to really have an efficient system, you need monitoring throughout the stack. And there's lots of other server vendors, hypervisor vendors out there that monitor most of these components, but they really can't peek inside the VM that well and really see not just whether the application is on or off, but look at the performance of the application. How healthy is it? Do you need to go spin up another instance of a VM to load balance the capacity across it so the end users have a great experience? It's one thing that we really try to focus on. The next is our cross-platform capabilities, being able to manage and interact throughout the stack. But we really think that this leads us to provide you guys with the foundation for the future. Now, yes, this is a marketed term, and I promise we're going to get really, really technical throughout the rest of the day. But with this foundation for the future, what we're saying is, invest in the cloud now. Get System Center 2012. Get Windows Server 2012. You might not use all the features now. You might not need automation in the cloud now. You might not be using the public cloud now. But you want to be enabled to go and use that in 6 months' time, in a year, to try new projects, new development cycles. What we're really trying to do is offer you this set of tools so that you can use it when you need it. And this really ties into one of the major changes with System Center 2012 in this release. It is now a single product. That's right, you go get System Center 2012, you get everything inside it. App controller, data protection manager, configuration manager, endpoint protection, virtual machine manager, operations manager, orchestrator, and service manager. It's no longer individual products that you have to go and buy. And the reason why we made this licensing change was we would have customers that would only buy VMM, and they were kind of price conscious, so they would never try out different technologies, things such as backing up their services, ways to offer self-service. But now, we offer you everything as a single product. You get it all, so you can start to try it out when you're ready. So we are providing you with the foundation for the future. And then finally, we like to talk about the cloud on your terms. Whether you want to run a public cloud or a private cloud, or something in between that we call the hybrid cloud, we're again giving you these tools and these capabilities. Now, I'm going to touch on applications a little more, because being able to monitor and run your applications efficiently is critical to all enterprises. Now, it's great to say, hey, I have an application, but I just don't know how well it's running. Now, every single Microsoft product that we design, we go through what is called the common engineering criteria. Now, I used to be on an engineering team, Jeff still is on the engineering team, and I don't know if you've had to go through the common engineering criteria. That was one of my jobs. It is about a 150-page checklist of every single requirement to ship an enterprise application at Microsoft. So you have to support IPv4, IPv6, Active Directory, internationalized domain names, etc., etc. But one of the key requirements, virtualization support. Every single Microsoft technology we build has to run as well on Hyper-V as on bare metal with minimal performance overhead. And so you can be ensured that every Microsoft application that we build is thoroughly tested both on a physical and in a virtualized environment. And you can find this list of details at KB article 957006.
And this is a really important point, because when it comes to common engineering criteria, it's funny you mentioned this. I actually wrote the common engineering criteria for virtualization.
Ah, nice. So you know all about this.
7 years ago, because we understood very quickly and keenly how important it is for our customers to understand. Well, listen, we want to make sure that virtualization is it's a key part of our infrastructure. We want to make sure that Microsoft is absolutely testing, and it's a key part of all of the engineering commitments we make at Microsoft. And it absolutely is a core part of our common engineering criteria. Here's the thing to understand. Number one, let me be very transparent about this. If you're running Microsoft Exchange, if you're running Microsoft SharePoint, if you're running Microsoft SQL, if you're running Dynamics, if you're running Link, if you're running insert Microsoft, let me be very clear. It absolutely runs best on Microsoft Hyper-V. I can say that with absolute clarity because number one, we have partnered very closely with these. I'm going to talk SQL is a perfect example. We spent a tremendous amount of time before we did any development on Server 2012 actually sitting down and understanding every key requirement that SQL had. We basically walked in and said, SQL team, what do we need to do to give you the ideal virtualization experience for SQL so that you can walk into any customer anywhere, anytime around the world and say, absolutely virtualize SQL? And that's exactly what we delivered in Server 2012. And so everyone, you know, understands the importance of making sure that we test our workloads and that they run fantastically on Hyper-V. And so, yes, I promise we're going to delve into this. This first section has been very intro, just so we kind of, you know, set some common understanding. But common engineering criteria is an extremely important one. We actually do performance tuning, we do scalability testing, we do performance analysis, we do all sorts of analysis all on Hyper-V, which runs a core part of our infrastructure. Just to give you one data point, on an average day, not week, not month, on an average day, we create and deploy over 30,000 virtual machines running on Hyper-V.
Wow. I'm shocked. I had no idea.
It's
amazing.
That's just, and let me be very clear, that's only in the Windows Server division. I'm not even counting outside the Server division. I'm not talking about client. I'm not talking about SQL or Exchange or SharePoint or Link or anything. I'm talking about just the core Windows Server team. We deliver over 30,000 VMs in test every single day. So you're not only seeing a highly performance tuned, but we test it like no one else tested out there. So it's an extremely, extremely highly tuned process we have.
That's great. And I mean, beyond just having this integration within Microsoft and within our own product groups, we really do try to go for this pitch of this cross-platform from the metal up.
Yes.
And again, this is so you don't have to throw out your existing investments. We partner with a variety of different hardware partners. We have a program called the Microsoft the Private Cloud Fast Track Program. I'm going to talk about that in a minute as well. As we look at our multi-hypervisor management, obviously we have great integration with Hyper-V, but we have full support for VMware and Citrix hypervisors as well, that we can manage them using Virtual Machine Manager. We can monitor them using Operations Manager, and we can automate them through things such as deploy virtual machines using System Center Orchestrator. As we look at the operating systems that we support inside our virtual machines, it's not just Windows. We support a variety of different Linux distributions. Actually, Jeff and I were talking about this the other day. I asked him to spit out as many distributions as he can off the top of his head. So, Linux distributions on Hyper-V.
Well,
go.
Red Hat, SUSE, CentOS, OpenSUSE, Ubuntu, Debian.
Fedora.
We'll get into a bunch more. In fact, I'll show you them running, but we've done a tremendous amount of work. We have an interop team to make sure that our drivers are simply in the Linux distros, and it works great without the customer needing to do anything.
Absolutely. But beyond that, we wanted to integrate with our management partners as well. So if you're using HP, Dell, BMC, CA, full integration, you can go and tie in with these ticketing systems, with these management systems, with these hardware operational systems, and have full automation, full integration with them as well. And then, of course, our application frameworks. Well, we're partial to the Microsoft .NET framework. We have full support for Java, PHP, Ruby on Rails, you name it. We really do have this cross-platform interoperability throughout the stack. So have confidence. You don't have to throw out your existing investments. Make new investments in the Microsoft virtualization platform, and you can continue to use what you already have today. Now, the Microsoft Fast Track program, this is essentially a way for you to go and purchase a pre-verified, fully certified solution from one of our OEM partners. So you say, hey, I love this highly virtualized environment. I love this private cloud, but what are all the pieces I need to pull together to make this? Well, we need our hardware, our management, our operating system, and our partners.
You know, I can sum this up in one easy question. Very often someone will come to me and say, Jeff, I just want to run 300 VMs. I just want to run 500 VMs. And what do I need to do? What hardware do I need to buy? Tell me what servers, what storage, how much memory, all of this. Well, what if I just said, look, here is a pre-configured, pre-validated solution. We work with our partners. Here you can see them, a bunch of them listed here. And we provide exactly that. You get System Center, you get Windows Server, and guess what? It's been spec'd out to run this many VMs with these types of performance characteristics and allows you to very quickly get into a Microsoft private cloud.
And I mean, they can even ship these on containers where they drop it off in your data center, plug in 2 power supplies for redundancy, 2 internet connections for redundancy, and you can get this up and running in just a matter of minutes. It's not you even have to re-rack and cable everything yourself. These can even be shipped in self-contained pods. So a great way to quickly adopt to the Hyper-V story. Now, with System Center 2012, Service Pack 1, we've really focused again on providing this productive infrastructure, making things easy to use, easy to operate. Understanding your applications better, the performance, the operations, making them work as efficiently as possible, and giving you the flexibility to manage your cloud, public cloud, or private cloud. And we're going to be talking a lot about System Center 2012 SP1 in our final modules of the day. But essentially, our goal here is to provide this comprehensive cloud platform. We start with our hardware. We add Windows Server 2012, providing our availability, scalability, security, and then key management components for our networking, storage, and virtualization. We manage this with our System Center 2012, providing you with a variety of different scenarios, from VM hosting, database management, application operations, or then even serve as a genuine hoster to third parties and external people. Now, Microsoft virtualization is actually beyond just server virtualization, which is what we've been focused on with Hyper-V. We actually offer client virtualization as well on Windows 8. So did you know, on your Windows 8 laptop, assuming that you have hardware-assisted virtualization capabilities, you could go run Hyper-V. So you can have your client laptop that runs different servers, Linux, Windows Server 2012, just from the single box. So a nice new improvement that we bought here, which is being asked for by a lot of our developers that just have their laptop, yet they need to spin up these different environments. We then have virtualization in Windows Azure, our public cloud service, where you can deploy and manage your virtual machines there. We offer what's called profile virtualization, which essentially allows you to move important parts of your business applications, documents, logon information between different laptops, between different machines, as you go to different parts of your data center, different parts of your environment, what we often call roaming profiles. We then have desktop virtualization, which gives you the ability to go and rapidly deploy instances of different desktops for, let's say, a large help desk staff. They don't have a dedicated machine. They have a thin client terminal, which consists of a monitor, a mouse, a keyboard, and an internet connection, and they're essentially connecting to a pool of virtual machines. And finally, application virtualization, also known as AppV. This allows you to actually virtualize an independent application, an executable, have it fully removed from the underlying operating system, so you could run applications of different versions that were built on different operating systems from the same machine. Now, as we wrap this up, we just really want to emphasize that Microsoft, we've invested in virtualization for the long run. We've built some of the largest virtualization properties on the planet. They're well tested, and it's well planned throughout our engineering cycle, from our long-term vision of moving to the cloud, through our engineering cycles with the common engineering criteria, to real-world operations that you see running properties such as Microsoft.com. Now, finally, going to mention a few resources that you can check out, you can download today. First is the evaluating the Microsoft software. We have the TechNet Evaluation Center. It offers free trials for all of our products. So technet.microsoft.com eval center. So right now, you can download Windows Server 2012, Windows 8. You can get access to Windows Azure accounts, System Center 2012. You can download these, try them out today. And finally, we want to ask you to join the Microsoft Virtual Academy community. These jump starts are brought to you in collaboration from the Microsoft Virtual Academy, Microsoft Learning, and the IT Pro Evangelism team. But what Microsoft Virtual Academy is our free online training portal. So you go online, you sign up, you train, lots of free lessons, they're structured in tracks, you collect points. So we have a nice community built around it. And today, if you go and use this voucher, aka.ms/MVA voucher, you actually get 50 free points that you can add to your profile just for attending this event. Now, this recording, if you're unable to stay the whole time, this will be made available on the Microsoft Virtual Academy in the near future. So if you liked it, you want to encourage other people to view it, or you just can't stay for the whole show, come back to the Microsoft Virtual Academy shortly, and you will receive a notification if you're signed up for this event when this course becomes available online. Well, with that, we would like to thank you. We're going to take a break. We will be back shortly, and then we're going to go dive into the technical sessions. So what's next? It's focusing on our infrastructure, right? So we're going to learn what are all the core requirements to get you up and running with Hyper-V on Windows Server 2012. Thank you.